What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the 16th episode of Inside the Bubble. We've been doing this since January. We're pacing about two a month coming into the end of the year through season one. Today we have on Joe Wagar, who back in the early days of Bubblegum and Leather helped me kind of map this out, helped me with the vision, the marketing, you know, the kind of the game plan, the backstory. He spent a lot of time listening to my thoughts about what I wanted it to be, what the brand should stand for, what I thought would appeal to people, and just did an awesome job making that into a lot of what you guys see today with some of the different graphics and our Instagram. So we didn't really spend a lot of time on that. That was kind of our original plan, was to talk about some of the history. I'm sure we'll do that at some point. We did get into, at the end, some talk about what we're going to do for our one-year anniversary party, our big birthday celebration for Bubblegum and Leather. So before that, we talked a lot about NFL football. Joe is a lifelong Bengals fan, and I am kind of slowly becoming one. So we talked a little bit about that, and then we got into some hobby talk where I actually answered some questions from Joe. So we kind of flipped hats, and I had a lot of fun with that. So if you like this format, I'd love to have Joe on some kind of schedule so we can talk about some of the stuff that we have coming up in the group and some of the things that we've been working on behind the scenes. If not, that's cool too. We can continue to do that, just me and him. But I figured you guys would appreciate the perspective, and I know that I personally value his experience and the insights that he's provided. So hope you enjoy. Check it out. Like, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff. And we'll try to continue this twice a month, once every 2 weeks kind of deal. Catch you guys soon. Welcome in to Inside the Bubble. It's a long-awaited guest again today. We've had several of those where it's tried due to scheduling, it's been tried and failed a few times, but very excited today because we have someone that almost everyone in our group knows, or has at least seen comment, and somebody that I've been friends with my entire life. So I'd like to introduce today Joe Wagar, who also is what we're going to title our Chief Mad Scientist, or CMS, at Bubblegum and Leather, and in charge of what we're going to call our Bubblegum Test Kitchen. So we'll talk a lot more about that at the end and get Joe's thoughts on that and let him explain that in more detail. But at kind of right off the top, just want to say hello and welcome to you, Joe, and hope you're doing well. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, buddy, it's good to be with you. I could not be happier to be inside the bubble. You're right, this has been long awaited, and I'm glad that our schedules finally worked out so that I could jump on this with you.
Well, we have a lot to talk about in a short amount of time, which I think is also like something we should just put in the byline of the pod, because I feel like we say that every single episode. But right off the top, you know, one of the things that we, going back to kind of the beginning of this, I re-listened to the first episode, which I would highly recommend never to do if you like have a podcast. Don't ever go back and listen to the first one you did, because it probably wasn't very good. But I was doing that, and in any case, it kind of reminded me, we talked about Adam Fowler and I, like why we're doing this, and you had an encounter with someone that kind of gave you one of those moments. We'll have to come up with some kind of title for that, but go ahead and kind of tell your story here about how kind of the hobby brings people together in interesting ways, I think.
No, that's exactly right. And just recently for my full-time job, we had an annual conference held here in Austin. Part of what my company does involves cryotherapy machines. And we have a facility in Poland, actually, where those machines are fabricated and put together and engineered. And we had one of those, the gentleman from the Poland operation come over, you know, and it was the first time I got to meet him or see him here in Austin. And it was really funny, you know, you only kind of get a few spare moments with these folks as they're wandering through the office. But we had a chance to talk, and he mentioned that he was a big fan of American basketball. And so, you know, I wanted to follow up with him. You know, I was like, well, well, who's your favorite player? You know, I thought maybe we might get a Luka fan, you know, in the mix.
Sure, somebody international, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, his answer could not have been more European, in my mind. He looked me dead in the eye and was like, "My favorite player is John Stockton." And I just absolutely love it, right? I mean, it's like the perfect, it's just too perfect. The gentleman had played basketball growing up, you know, he described himself as more of an attacking player, but clearly has a good appreciation for the big facilitator, Mr. John Stockton. And so I got a real big kick out of that. You know, I thought it was pretty funny and we had a good laugh, you know, a little bit of a talk. But what was really interesting to me, and was just kind of a happy accident, is I actually bought a few of the Michael Jordan, I believe it's the Upper Deck, the full like holographic cards.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I picked those up in a fire sale, I think a few months ago from someone in the group. Showed up in great condition. Really like the look of them. But you know, I'm probably not going to send them to get subbed or anything. And I actually started looking into the checklist on that set and thought, hey, this could kind of be fun. Just a beautiful short print set to collect. And so the first one that I decided to order off eBay for, I think, all of $2 was the John Stockton UD hologram. And so that had just arrived like the day before I had this conversation with this gentleman. And so I was like, you know, I'm interested in building this set, but like, truth be told, I have two Jordans and one John Stockton. I'm not exactly, you know.
I'm not very far in.
So I decided to just go ahead and grab that card. I put it in a one touch and grabbed an envelope and took it with me to the actual conference and caught this friend, you know, right on his way out, on his way to the airport. And it just handed it off to him. I threw a bubble gum and leather sticker in there for him, you know, but it was just a quick note and just said, you know, it's nice to meet you and let's play some basketball next time you're in town. And I got a message from him once he got back, you know, to Europe. And was just, you know, like, thank you so much. This is such a cool card. Really appreciate getting to meet you. You know, it seemed like it was a really, he genuinely really appreciated it. And for me, you know, that's just a conversation at the water cooler, you know, and a $2 card that I just had laying on my desk that I hadn't even, you know, put away yet. And for something that was such a low, you know, monetary cost to invest in, I feel like I have a really good friend over in Poland now, and someone that I'm looking forward to playing basketball with at some point, hopefully in the future. And, you know, we would have been friends probably either way, but it was just a really cool, like, hobby moment for me. When so much is going on with what we like to collect, you know, here in the industry, and things are changing and prices are going up, and you kind of get back to just that core interaction of trading cards, or, you know, I have this card. I know one of my friends really likes to collect this player. You know, here you go. You know, let's go ahead and just do a rack, you know, one of those random acts of kindness. And it was just a really cool moment for me that got to the core of why we all collect at the end of the day. It's great making money, but it's even better making friends.
It is. And it's kind of funny that, you know, you brought up that story because you and I hadn't talked about it prior to the episode. But that's legitimate been my experience with almost every single person that I've come into contact with doing this whole kind of, you know, whatever we want to call it. We can just call it bubble gum and leather, but like doing the whole thing, it's shocking to me what that means to someone. So, for instance, like if you find someone in the group, and I'll shout out my buddy Steve Lane, he's a big Ricky Davis fan. Like, and that's cool. Like, I appreciate that because not many people know who Ricky Davis is. So when I find one, I throw it to the side and I shoot it with his stuff. And I'm not saying that for anyone to like be like, oh, you're so great. What is cool about it is when he gets it, he never talks about the cards that he bought or spent like 10 or 15 bucks on, or what, you know, the break cards. He's always like, dude, that was an awesome Ricky Davis that you said. You know, it's like that means so much more to people, like even than the value does. And granted, like, I mean, we're all do like I wouldn't have started a business had I not tried to turn a nickel on it. But at the end of the day, like that's what makes it so fun. And hearing somebody who lives in Poland who probably legit like has trouble getting a lot of John Stockton cards because of like how much they cost to ship over there, like
Yeah,
that probably meant a lot to him, man.
Well, it felt good, you know, and it really felt genuine, you know. And I think those moments have a tendency to cut through a lot of the noise that we've just grown accustomed to in our lives, you know, not to make some sort of grand statement about our society or nothing. But I do think we have these human moments of authenticity that just kind of really stand out. And like I said, this conference, and I was heavily involved in the planning. My week could not have been more hectic. And I don't mean to make it sound like I really I'm giving myself a pat on the back here, but you know, just that brief conversation with him really did stand out in what was a blur of a week. And it felt good, man. I kind of look at it as almost like the ultimate card chase. You know, it's always fun to go in the hobby boxes and rip open some cards and see if I can't find, you know, my favorite player or one of those really lucrative cards. But like the ultimate chase is having your friends show up with cards that you like, right?
Right.
Because you never know when that's going to come. And it's always such a cool little kind of, chain of events that leads to it. And it really is kind of the stuff that's special, in my opinion.
Totally. And what a cool way to kind of kick off. I mean, we're not going to spend the entire episode kind of talking about hobby specific things, but I mean, we are going to get to, like I said, at the end, some interesting updates we have specific to bubblegum and leather. But before that, since I didn't really do kind of like an agenda off the top, Joe and I are also going to talk a little bit of NFL football. The Cincinnati Bengals are a shocking 3-1. So I'm going to get Joe's thoughts on that. We're going to talk a little bit about what that means for his favorite coach of all time, Zach Taylor. And then we're going to get into some hobby discussion where I think I will probably answer a couple questions, which will be fun for me because usually when we do these, I've been asking a lot of the questions. So since we don't have a ton of time, let's dive right into the NFL talk. So coming off of a Thursday night victory over Urban Meyer's Jaguars that apparently led him to do some skirt chasing at a bar on Saturday in Ohio, I would like to get your thoughts, Joe, on the Chase Young v. Joe Burrow kind of discussion. Now, when we're looking at it a year in the rearview mirror with a couple of big things that have happened in between, one being a giant ACL injury that apparently Joe Burrow has been able to come back from, but secondly, being the kind of unexpected 3-1 start that these guys have gotten off to.
Yeah, absolutely. And so a little bit about me. I'm a big fan, actually, of Marvin Lewis and AJ Green and Andy Dalton and all those guys. I had a lot of fun rooting for that team. It was kind of right around the time I was in just leaving college and kind of moving down here to Austin, Texas. So my kind of identity, right, in a new city as a transplant, I definitely kind of wore my Reds gear and my Bengals gear quite frequently, right? I stood out. And when the Bengals started winning games, that really meant a lot to me with that team. And that team will always mean a lot to me. Now, I did kind of feel like at the time that Chase Young was a better draft pick than Joe Burrow. Probably had no small it wasn't a coincidence that I was at the University of Texas versus LSU game that season as well, in which Joe Burrow, much to my chagrin, consistently ripped the secondary pretty much all night long. And so I've got a bit of a bone to pick. I'm a stubborn kid. I am still originally from Ohio, right? And so I'm doing my best to look at this objectively. But for the last two seasons, I have not been a fan of Zach Taylor. I think it's clear that Joe Burrow is very talented and he's going to be a very good quarterback. But the big issue is injury, right? With that ACL, is it going to happen again? And to that end, I think it's very, very fascinating to see how both these teams have played so far this year. I mean, last year, Washington made the play.
They
right?
did. And with you're poor looking- quarterback play, much on the strength of their defense.
Exactly. So it's to me, it's very interesting because you do kind of have almost complete opposites, not complete opposites, but it's two teams that went in two very different directions. And, I think, do the Bengals make the playoffs last year? If Joe Burrow stays healthy, I think they have a better season for sure. But I don't know if they eke out a playoff spot or not. And so as we look into this year, I was surprised by the opening victory. I was ready to mortgage the lease on the Bears game, thinking that Chicago was going to win. I didn't make any big bets, but I was glad to see Andy kind of got a bit of revenge there. But I've been surprised by these last two games. I didn't think they'd beat Pittsburgh, and I did not think they would beat Jacksonville either. So I think it's clear that, maybe they're winning in spite of Zach Taylor. Joe Burrow does seem to be fully healed up from that ACL, so they're definitely looking better than I expected. But at the same time, Washington's still 2-2, and they've had some nice wins as well. And when you look at the Bengals' record at 3-1, if I'm not mistaken, all three of those teams that they beat have a losing record. And even the Bears are sitting at 2-2. And so like there's still a sense of fool's gold to me. And again, I know that I'm being a pessimist here, and that I'm being a bit of a stick in the mud. And I am trying to take a step back. I know everybody in Cincinnati is more or less delirious with joy following that Thursday night win. And I am glad they won with the Ring of Honor. Those suits looked awesome. It was a great night in the jungle, you know, to see everybody packing out that stadium and being loud in the second half. But, you know,
and,
for the rest
I think,
of the season,
you know, not to interrupt, Joe, but I think one of the things, too, like living here that makes it a little bit unique is I'm not even positive, although I'm not. Up until recently, I did never profess to be a Bengal fan, but I'm not sure that the swell of enthusiasm that I'm seeing here is around Zach Taylor as much as it is around the fact that they won a primetime game, which traditionally with Andy Dalton, they seem to struggle to do. Now, granted, it was against the 0-4 Jaguars with a rookie quarterback, but I think that fueled a lot of like the what I saw to be like the passion and elation this week was like, we finally got that off our back, you know?
Absolutely. And it was a great win. And I think you're right. Andy Dalton doesn't make that throw to Uzama for the go-ahead score. It's not going to happen. I love Andy Dalton. He has plenty of good plays, but he's not making that adjustment at the line of scrimmage. He's not buying time and he's not putting it in the breadbasket the way that Burrow did for Uzama to cut up the seam and score that go-ahead touchdown. That it was just a beautiful play, you know. It's moving Uzama from the right-hand hash over across the field. You know, I don't think Andy Dalton makes that throw. As much as I love those guys, you know, Joe Burrow is winning. Now, is he winning despite of Zach Taylor? Perhaps, you know, I definitely could see that. I'm starting to see, you know, as much as I'm loath to admit, you know, Zach Taylor does maybe seem to be growing into it just a little bit. I like the post game in the locker room. It seemed like he has at least a little bit of respect from that team. So, you know, for me, I'm still very conflicted. I think what's interesting to look at, though, is from the Washington perspective, from the Chase Young perspective, investing in that defense paid dividends in the first year. Now, Chase Young can get hurt, same as Joe Burrow, but obviously Burrow's in a bit more precarious situation. And beyond just those two picks, you know, you have these two directions by both these football teams. I think it's really interesting, again, having the benefit of being down here in Austin, to see, you know, what both these teams did in the draft this year. Everybody, again, in Cincinnati is very high on Jackson Carmen. And from all accounts, he has had a really good start. But, you know, Washington also drafted a second-round offensive tackle, Samuel Cosmi from the University of Texas. And he is also playing very well, you know. And so you can see how both of these teams have gone about building their rosters in very similar ways, except for that pivotal decision between, do I take a generational talent on defense or do I take a generational talent under center on offense?
And I think what's even more interesting is that I'm sure they could have the same debate in reverse in Washington, because, you know, they're probably sitting there going, yeah, we have a great defense and we're winning games and we made the playoffs last year, but our weakest spot is quarterback. What if we had Joe Burrow? You know, like you could play on the other side too.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredibly dynamic when you think about what this Washington football team could look like with a decent quarterback, right? And when you look at the Bengals and the way that they're playing, the defense has already stepped up fairly significantly from last year, especially that pesky linebacking core, right? And so we already have a pretty good defensive front, but you put in a generational talent there on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, you know, you're really looking at shutting out teams, you know, not just beating teams. I mean, I think you could shut out teams, you know, with a Chase Young on the Bengals defense. Certainly. And so, you know, it's an interesting kind of mind game. I'm probably doing, the only thing I'm really probably accomplishing is just torturing myself. But it's going to be fun, I think, to watch how these teams progress. You know, I think the Bengals are in position to make a run at the playoffs, right? I mean, I don't see how they can't be right now. It'll be interesting to see how they navigate adversity when they face a little bit tougher competition. Both these teams could well make the playoffs, but I'd love to see them play each other again. I did take a no small amount of satisfaction to seeing Chase Young get a good lick on Joe last year when they played, and was happy to see Joe pop right back up too, you know.
Certainly, yeah. And I can totally understand your position kind of and where you're coming from, having described, you know, your experience with that team, because, you know, there's I kind of have that same similar feeling with the Reds right now, which we're not going to get into today. But it's like, you know, I really rooted for a lot of these, you know, 2010 to 2015 guys. I don't agree with the course of the organization now. Do I really want to continue to, you know, put my money and support behind them? So I can kind of, you know, I totally have sympathy for where you're coming from there.
Yeah, we joked a little bit about pulling the jerseys out of the closet. You know, I was kind of in the position like, this team's going to have to show me something first. And, you know, and they have, you know, they have definitely showed me something here in this first month of football. And it's fun. You know, it's fun to watch the Cincinnati Bengals win. And, you know, I'm a sports fan. I've got thoughts, right? I've got opinions. But at the end of the day, it's great for the city of Cincinnati to see this team win. And I'm excited to get my Joe Burrow jersey on, man. I really am. It's going to be a fun November. It's going to be a fun October. To see how this team progresses, and I'm here for it.
Well, I think we could probably even delve deeper into, you know, other facets of the NFL, but even specific to the Bengals. And, you know, I've got a whole bevy of takes now, having seen them in person. But I think in the interest of time, we'll probably move on to our hobby discussion here, because we've got three or four things that I think we want to kind of bally around, if time allows, regarding kind of the hobby life and you know, bubblegum and leather in particular. And, you know, given your role with the organization, we'll call it, you had some questions for me, I think, about how some of the current initiatives that we have, or, you know, different things we're doing regarding the YouTube and whatnot are going. So I'm happy to do my best to kind of wear the other hat here and answer some questions from you.
Yeah, great, man. We'll do a little bit of a lightning round. I'm really interested in getting your thoughts on this year's Allen and Ginter release. I was able to get a handful of packs and watch several streams of folks opening it up. And not the least of which was the Pack-A-Day series on the Bubblegum and Leather YouTube channel. But we're just interested in kind of your thoughts on this year's edition, some of the short prints that they inserted, and really kind of, are you continuing to seek out Allen and Ginter? Or are you fairly well satisfied now that you've, I'd assume, open up maybe just one or two hobby boxes?
Well, it's kind of my yearly gift to myself, because it's rather economical. This year, I think I paid $120 for the hobby box, which has 24 packs in it. So I feel like, yeah, I feel like, you know, delivered at my house, like I can probably sell the contents of that for $120, which I know everyone's like, oh, don't you do this because you love it? Well, when I open something for myself, as opposed, you know, for the business, I really try not to think about it that way. But which we'll get into with some of these NFL questions I think we're going to talk about. But with the prices of boxes, it just is almost never in my favor to open something for myself. So this is the rare time where I don't really feel guilty about it. And to kind of answer your question specific to this year's product, they were about halfway through the box. I think I've opened 12. I need to get one or two more of the videos up on the channel. But I have yet to hit one of the rip cards, and I got one last year as well. Now, last year, what was interesting in the 2020 box is that I hit one of what they call the hobby hot boxes. But for Allen and Ginter, all that means is that all the cards are foil. It doesn't give you like any more autographs or relics or anything like that. Now, it's still cool because I had about 120 cards that I had never really seen anyone else have, you know, foil versions of those cool cards. I really like them, but they're not worth a ton. So what I'm really interested in as we get into these last 12 packs, I'm pretty familiar with the relics. I like the mini relics. I hope I hit one of those. But the rip cards are so cool, because I don't know how much you've seen or if you've hit one, Joe, but what the premise is that the outer shell of the card can be a totally different player than the actual hit inside, or it might not even be a hit inside. So it's kind of like a little second chance to gamble after you already opened the pack. You can either keep the card intact and kind of keep the mystery alive, and that has some value to it, or you can, you know, really go for it and see what you get. For instance, my buddy Dan was bidding on a rip card. The outer shell was Joe Girardi, you know, the manager, Joe Girardi. And then the inside of it, though, was a Joey Votto autograph. And he was like, wow. When I get this card, how am I going to display it? Because, like, the Joe Girardi part is around it. Like, I don't really, and I was like, you know, that is kind of a bummer. Like, you hit a card of somebody that you really like, and you either have to kind of deform it and detach it in order to get the player you don't want to see off of it, you know, or kind of keep it intact and just know what's inside. So I think the premise is really cool, but I also think there has to be some value in either making those more generic as far as like the outer part, or, you know, making them the same team or the same player.
Yeah, I actually was I was watching the Pack-A-Day rips, you know, on the YouTube channel, and had some a rip card video pop up as a recommended watch, and I was actually unfamiliar with the rip cards up till then, and like, talk about a rabbit hole, man. I think I spent the rest of the night, you know, watching people open up these cards. It was so fascinating to me. You know, I've got a background in print production as a graphic designer, and so for a lot of these cards, my mind immediately goes to how in the hell did they produce this, right? And to me, it's so cool to see folks literally, I mean, it's really sealed in there, and to physically peel off the face of the card and see what's underneath. I love it. You know, it's an adrenaline rush. It definitely is a gamble. But yeah, I was curious if you had hit any this year or not. And like, I almost want to go on eBay and bid on one, but at the same time, I kind of like, I'd obviously much rather pull that out of a hobby box or a pack of cards.
Yeah, I feel like if I get one in the box, I'm going to be inclined to open it because it's kind of like a sunk cost already. Whereas right. If I ordered one on eBay, I feel like I would want to keep it intact. Is that silly, or does that make sense?
Well, no, I mean, yeah, because it's a bigger investment. It's a standalone investment, right? Like when you pull that out of a hobby box, man, that's just the cherry on top. If I go and order that from, you know, eBay, you know, not to go on a soapbox or anything, but, you know, we see what people do with the scales, you know, at retail. For sure. When they go into the store. Like, how do I know this guy hasn't like X-rayed this card or something? You know what I mean? And he's got the reverse, right? We got the Joey Votto on the front, and it's a Joe Girardi auto on the inside.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? And he's putting that up on eBay for, you know, a little bit less than normal. You know, you just kind of wonder about with stuff like that, about the quality of the jackpot, I guess it were, and just how much has somebody done to kind of study this card? Why did they sell it, you know, when they did? I much prefer to pull it out of a pack, because otherwise I'm more inclined to just kind of sit on it and play it safe.
I agree. And just to kind of put like a bow on the Allen and Ginter, like, I guess my like ultimate take would be it's really cool product. Like, to me, it has stuff come out that I don't see anywhere else. That has value to me because I like oddball things. I mean, I bought a Mario rookie card. Like, that is something that I particularly enjoy. But like, if I were to give hobby advice, like on long-term resale value and whatnot, it doesn't seem like the rookies that come out of that set, you know, stand up to even some of the similar products like Heritage and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So for like, my advice would be like, if it's something that you love, like me, where I, you know, I throw every year in a box, and then down the line, I go back through and like, love to look at what they decided to put in that year's set. Like, that's fun for me, the boxers and stuff that come out of it. I think that's cool. But like, if you're looking for just like resale value, probably not like your best bet.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you hold on, if you put any of those Allen and Ginter boxes away in dead stock, essentially, or in deep storage, like maybe some of your other 90s basketball sets, or if it's, you know, like you said, this is my treat, I'm just going to go ahead and open it and rip it. There's not a ton of long-term investment value here. At the end of the day, it really is just kind of a really fun set, right?
It is. And like, I think the caveat being like, there's a few now in retrospect of like, they're either be entertainers or maybe boxers, like Manny Pacquiao, for example. If you find the rookie card, in theory, you know, because he didn't have, you know, really cards printed of him. Sometimes there's certain boxing sets that they've produced. But my point is, like, those can have long-term value. So you can go out on eBay and search like Allen and Ginter sealed hobby box, and you'll find some that are rather expensive that I'm sure people didn't pay what they would get out of it now for. And I've thought about that, you know, like, well, maybe I order two next year and I throw one on the shelf and, you know, I open one. But it seems to me that, at least from my experience opening them, that they're gravitating toward more like sports writers and announcers. And my experience is those don't have kind of the long-term kitsch that, like, you know, a Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather or somebody that like is in another sport and doesn't really have cards produced of them.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And like you said, to put a bow on this, moving from the fringe of the hobby to the stuff that's so hotly anticipated, right? Let's jump over to the NFL hobby box preview.
And this is super fascinating because this year has been nuts. So sorry, well, go ahead.
Well, I say you just posted in the group just a few days ago, I believe, talking about Mosaic. So would love to kind of hear your thoughts on that. But yeah, you know, without you know, last year and since we were all kind of spoiled with Joe Burrow, and so he's on the cover of everything, and kind of everything's a good thing to buy, right? When there's a Joe Burrow rookie card somewhere in the mix. What's the big draw this year? What's the effect of seeing something like a select, you know, go to something that's much more mass produced? Where are the Mosaic boxes? I'll let you take it away.
Well, I think that the number one thing that I've noticed comparing last year to this year is that everything got more expensive by a lot, by a factor of more than what we normally see year over year. And second to that, that collectors as a whole are getting wiser to what they're going to put their money into. So I'll expound quickly because I know we don't have a ton of time. But for instance, last year, people could crack Donruss blaster boxes. And if, as long as I can't talk today, as long as you got a Herb or a Burrow or even a Tua and sometimes a Hurts, you pretty well could expect to get your money back out of that blaster. But what we're seeing this year is because the market got a little over flooded with graded base rookies of even quarterbacks in this case, there's just not quite as much resale value on some of those, what I'll call hybrid cards, meaning they were released retail and hobby. So what I'm seeing, just as an observer, as you know, Joe, we're trying to make money at this. So you know, we're seeing how good we can do. But what I'm noticing as an observer is there seems to be a pull almost more back to when we were young. If you recall, like in the early 2000s, a lot of the rookies were short printed. Some were even serial numbered. And for instance, you might expect to get one a pack. It might even say one rookie per pack, or maybe you get a certain number a box. There's 24 packs and you get 18 rookies. And it seems to me that once people saw, well, yeah, it's cool to have a Zion rookie, but if there's 50 million of them and everyone has one, now it's not worth anything. So it seems there's a pull back to parallels, numbered cards, things like that. So what I'm seeing the most push for in terms of football is like the stuff that already got released this year, but that was more high end. For instance, like gold standard, that stuff seems to really retain its value. In fact, you know, some of it is insane what it's going for, certified. So almost anything that's like hobby only. But what'll be more interesting to me is clearly Donruss has felt an impact of kind of just the overproduction and kind of the, okay, we all have, you know, 1,000 of this card. But what'll be fascinating is when Prism comes out, or Mosaic, like you said, one of the more chromium type products that is available hobby and retail, but that stuff always draws people in. So I'll be surprised if we don't get a little more fuel to the fire again once we get one of those releases. But right now, I'm not seeing kind of like that pull like we did last year for just anything where it's score, doesn't matter. Donruss, doesn't matter. I want it. I'm seeing a little more selectiveness.
Yeah, yeah. Or was it Phoenix or Fire or whatever that
Phoenix,
that one?
Yeah, that's another good one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is there any one drop that you personally are looking forward to for football season?
Well, so right now I think I'm pretty focused on Prism at this point, you know, kind of because I'll be interested to see, you know, what, for instance, like a Herbert last year was about $100 card out of the pack. You know, if I grabbed a Herbert Prism rookie, I could expect to throw it up in the group and get $100 for it. What will we see with Trevor Lawrence? What will we see with Justin Fields? What will we see with Zach Wilson? Are we going to see they're all $100 each, or are we going to see a similar drop down like we've seen in Donruss of 20%, 25%, you know, are those going to be $75 cards this year? Because what that does, as you know, is it has a trickle down. Now people don't want to pay $50 for a hanger if the card that they're going to pull out of it, the best card they might get, might be worth $50. Like there's a trickle down there. So that's what I'm kind of focused on. But as far as like hobby only releases, I mean, there's a ton of good stuff to come. We're going to see National Treasures Collegiate, you know, things like that. And that stuff always, you know, is going to be insanely priced. Even when the hobby cools off, that stuff never goes down.
Right, right. Well, I'm looking forward to it. It's been interesting. It's been an interesting year for the hobby, but I think it's great that football's back. It kind of marks the 1 year kind of anniversary for me for kind of getting back into the hobby somewhat around this time last year. So I feel like I've got a bit of my sea legs under me and excited to kind of re-navigate all of these releases and be a bit more tactful with what I'm investing my money in, especially now that Joe Burrow, again, isn't a rookie and stuff like that. My only other question for you on hobby life is something that I wanted to spin up, kind of called dumb questions. And this may evolve over time, but again, as I've only kind of re-entered the hobby space since last year, while you've been diligently plugging away at it on the eBay page prior to Bubblegum and Leather. I wanted to kind of throw out a few thoughts that I've had as I've been collecting, or have this be an ongoing series where we can field questions of some way that are, you know, this to me is a dumb question that I probably should know the answer to, and I'm excited to get your response on. My dad has dutifully sent my old baseball card collection down to me here in Texas. And so I have actually a lot of old, you know, kind of 80s cards and early 90s cards. And I, you know, first thing I did was, you know, buy a bunch of penny sleeves and kind of start to sleeve them up. And, you know, these cards have not been necessarily super well protected. They're not valuable cards. I do like the way that they look and want to preserve them if I can. But my question is, penny sleeving old cards, is it worth the risk? Because for me, I feel like I'm damaging corners on these cards to the extent that I examine it before I put it in the penny sleeve to try to make sure, like, you know, to reassure myself that, like, oh, that was already there, you know,
right,
like,
none
of these cards are probably going to get subbed. But just in terms of protecting these cards, am I better off with some of this old kind of mass produced late 80s, early 90s cards, just keeping them in a, just keeping them in a box, right, unsleeved? Or am I just doing this whole penny sleeving business the wrong way?
So there's a couple schools of thought on this. And number one, I love this concept. We've talked about it. I'll shout him out too, my buddy Kevin and I. And then, you know, when you mentioned it as well, Joe, I think this is something we're going to take and run with. So we'll have more details to come. But I love the idea of, like, being able to answer these questions in open forum, like, without it being attached to someone, unless you just want to fall on the sword for it, Joe, which is also cool.
I'm happy to be the first to fall on the sword, yes.
To answer this question, my personal opinion on this is I put them, those really flimsy, where the corners can peel up, like those kind of cards you're talking about, you know, 80s, sometimes even earlier, you know, late 70s, I put those in card savers without a penny sleeve, like just directly in the card saver, because you can... you know, using your thumb and your index finger, you can pull it open to where it will not increase the corner damage as you kind of put it into the casing, if that makes sense. But the converse to that is that those are really expensive. And, you know, when you're talking about cards that are worth a nickel, do you want to pay, you know, 25 cents to sleeve or hold each one of them? And usually the answer is no. So for me, I only do that if it's what I call like a PC card, you know, if it's something that, like, I want to keep, like a Ron Gant, you know, or something like that, you know, I'll throw it in one of those. Cause to your point, the way penny sleeves are constructed now are more kind of to slide over a chromium card. So it almost drags on the surface of, like, you know, an older style surface card. So that's not like a dumb question. I've done it 100 times and then I'm mad at myself because I'm like, now it looks worse than it did, but, you know, before I put it in the sleeve. So I think that's consideration number one. But the second school of thought, and just something to consider, because I've gotten this question from others, is, you know, it's much less likely that you'll do that in like a binder type of situation. The sleeves are very tight. The binder sleeve, the page sleeves are have a little more give to them. So a lot of folks, you know, put their old cards in like a binder. That to me is too scary, because I've seen too many times where it falls, you know, down off the shelf and basically you just ruined the whole thing in one fell swoop. I'd rather ruin my cards one at a time than all at once. But, you know, that is another school of thought. And if it's something you're not going to take down and look at a lot, you know, I certainly can see that, you know, if it's something you're only taking out. For instance, I know someone who has like an older 1950s Topps almost complete set, and it's not like something they can grade, but it's something they want to keep in the family. And so they have it in kind of one of those albums, and like, it's not taken out very much, so there's very little risk to the cards. But I think it's a great question, because I agree. I can't tell you how many times I've further damaged a card because I was trying to protect it.
Yeah, I'm a bit paralyzed by fear. I have a very large box of old cards. I just don't know quite how to approach, you know. But I love the idea of the binder, you know, because, again, these aren't things I'm going to be routinely looking at. But with my design background, I do like some of these kind of more eclectic designs that we see back in the 80s, and certainly stuff like the Skybox basketball in the early 90s. You know, it's very enjoyable just for me to look at, whether the corners are dinged or not. But I hate that feeling when I look at when I put it in, and I'm like, man, I really did just take that from maybe an 8 to a 4. And
I know. Yeah. You're like, I mean, I already knew it was bad. Now it's so much worse. So I totally think that that's a legitimate question. In fact, maybe there's an untapped business opportunity there for someone who wants to construct a better sleeve for some of those older, flimsier cards. Cause I think it is a legitimate question.
Well, that's a good segue into our final kind of topic, which is kind of talking about bubblegum and leather and some of the updates we have for the group. You know, as the chief mad scientist of the bubblegum test kitchen, we will have to start looking into alternative penny sleeves for older cards.
There's so many unique. That's down on the list, though. We've got too many others ahead of it.
We do. And we're doing a lot of fun stuff at Bubblegum and Leather. And so I wanted to take some time and talk about kind of some of the things that are going on in the group. The biggest of which is, you know, we're moving away from breaks for a while. And that's been a big part of what we've done over the last year. And I know that some people may kind of be a bit concerned about that, but I am here to reassure everybody that, you know, BG&L isn't going anywhere anytime soon. And what you're really seeing here and behind the scenes, what I've tried to help Andrew with, is really looking at, you know, when we started this last year, when Andrew started this last year, it really was looking at this as kind of an opportunity to do breaks. And as the hobby has evolved over the last 12 months, we've seen just, I mean, the ground has shifted beneath our feet in real time. And I mean that in a good way. We've been able to focus on things like more submissions. We've been able to get the content arm of BG&L up and running on YouTube and with this very podcast inside the bubble. And what we're looking at from a strategy standpoint is segmenting each of these different product offerings into something that Andrew can kind of run from a dashboard perspective. You know what? Breaks are a little bit tough right now. Retail price is going through the roof. I'm going to turn that switch off. Now, we're not turning the lights out on the group, right? The bids are still going strong. You guys are going to see even more emphasis on things like the YouTube channel and on Spotify with our content channel. But I'm working currently right now on branding each of these little verticals. And we're going to give Andrew the opportunity to really diversify what we're selling and also commit to each of these verticals in a really, really dedicated way that you as a member of BG&L can follow along and also schedule for. Right. If you know that this weekend we'll be running a lot of fire sales, maybe next weekend's going to be our bubblegum razzes. We're going to have our bubblegum content sprinkled in throughout. Just wanted to remind folks, you know, that we're not going anywhere. We're doing a lot of fun things. The test kitchen is kind of something that came out of left field, but it was a way for me to describe my role within this group, which really is to kind of go out, be experimental, kind of find things that work, find things that don't, do that on my time so Andrew doesn't have to worry about it, be a bit of a standalone R&D department. We're considering things like the apparel line within that purview, things that I can get spun up for the group that you'll have an opportunity to buy or give me feedback on, that doesn't necessarily take a whole lot of time away from Andrew while he runs the broader group. So Andrew, I'll let you speak a little bit about our upcoming 1 year party, but that's kind of our timeline as we kick off season 2 of Bubblegum and Leather. While we are going to take a little bit of a break on the breaks, expect to see a lot more product and a lot more types of product in the group, with some dedicated advertising, some dedicated verticals that should, in theory and in our minds, our goal is to make this easier for the members to plan and budget the things that they like to buy, both from Andrew and from the other members in the group.
I think you said it perfect. There's not anything, you know, that I could even add to that that would sum it up any better. I think your description, Joe, of kind of the strategy shift is accurate. The only thing that I would add is that, as silly as this sounds, and, you know, we're not trying to sound like white knights, but it is important to us that we provide value And I think that at this time, it's really difficult to buy a box and feel like we're providing it to you guys at a value where I feel comfortable basically selling it to you. And that's not a shot at anyone else who's breaking at all. Some folks have better pricing. Some folks have different audiences. I understand that. But what I was finding and hearing back from our members was that, you know, it's really hard for me to give you $40, you know, on a box that I may, you know, come out empty handed for. And I'd much rather apply that $40 to, you know, something else. It's not that, you know, you guys didn't want to spend it at Bubblegum and Leather. You just wanted to spend it on other things. So we've tried to take that feedback. And the only thing I'll add quickly, because we are short on time before I talk about the 1 year party, is that, you know, Joe mentioned we'll see a lot of different product offerings, you know, razzes and still sealed boxes and all that stuff. But we are still going to do breaks. They're just going to be a lot different.
Yes.
We're not going to do anything really like you're seeing other people do, because like I mentioned, you know, it seems like there is a little bit of a direction shift in what people want. So we're going to look and do retro stuff or hard to find stuff or Pokemon or, you know, a single pack, a high end pack. You know, we talked about how cool that would be. You get, you know, you pay $100 for a 1996 Topps Chrome pack, but maybe you get the Kobe, you know, and how many people would want to jump in on that? So those are the things that we're looking at in season two. Season one was a learning experience. We knew it would be. I don't know what I would have done without, you know, a lot of your members' help and specifically Joe. But to having said all that, you know, to that end, we're really excited because as we come up on Black Friday 2021, that will be the 1 year anniversary of when we really kind of kicked this off. Some of you guys, you know, were rolling with me before that and we were doing things in other groups or you were working with me on eBay, but that's when we kind of kicked off the group. And it's really been a wild ride. In some ways it feels like it was very, very short time. In some ways it feels like it was a very long time ago. So we want to kind of give back to you guys who have been with us, you know, new and long-term members, those who have joined us recently and those who have been there from the beginning, and do some different kind of giveaways. And I think you guys will expect to see a lot of info leading up to that. Some of it's going to be interactive too, you know, where we might ask like, what was the favorite memory you had of, you know, the a break that we did, what was your best card you hit? And that might be how we enter some of those. But our commitment to you is to thank you for your patronage and really, you know, handing over your money, you know, to Bubblegum and Leather for something that, like I say, you could find in other places. And that means a lot to Joe. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to my family. So we're going to show you guys, you know, a lot of appreciation for that.
Yeah, definitely keep your eyes on the group. We've got a lot of fun things in the pipeline, and November is going to be a big month for us for sure. So tell your friends, keep growing the bubble, and even more good things are right around the corner. So y'all stay excited.
Joe, we will look forward. I know we've got a lot more to catch up on. This was appearance one of, I hope, many more, but I think we got through a good amount, and I thank you again for carving out time for me today.
Man, this was a blast. Thanks so much for having me on, buddy. And best of luck for the rest of this week. We'll touch base again here real soon.
All right. Talk soon. Thanks again.
Thanks, y'all. Cheers.
Bye.